This is the Warrior Kid podcast number 14, Ask Uncle Jake. This podcast is based on the two Way of the Warrior Kid books. The first one is called Wimpy to Warrior, the Navy SEAL Way, and the second one as well, which is called Mark's Mission. The books are about young Mark, who faces a bunch of problems that kids everywhere face. But Mark gets some help solving those problems from his Uncle Jake, who was a Navy SEAL and who stays with Mark during the summers. This podcast is for kids to hear some more lessons from Uncle Jake and also get the chance to ask Uncle Jake questions. So here we go. The first question is from a warrior kid named Jana, and she is 10 years old. And she says, in my karate class, we had a visiting black belt who said some different opinions than my sensei. How do I show respect to him even when I might question what he is trying to teach me? That's a very good question. Because you are right that you should show respect, but you're also right that you should question things. Uncle Jake talks about being humble a lot, and one of the reasons to stay humble is because it keeps your mind open. You should always be open to other ways of doing things, even if they're not the way that you learned. So it's okay to ask questions. And I'll tell you what, you should even ask questions of your own sensei. And any good sensei will question himself and always be open to new and better ways of doing things. So in that situation that you were in when a visiting black belt comes in, I would simply listen. I would pay attention. I would learn what they are teaching to the best of my ability. And then later I would test it and see how well it works. And there's a chance that it might work better. There's also a chance that it doesn't work. And part of the reason it might not work is because you're not doing it right. But you test it and you keep trying it and you keep an open mind. That's one of the best things about jiu-jitsu, is that you can test the moves live every day by sparring hard against your training partners. You learn what actually works and what doesn't work. And that's why jiu-jitsu constantly changes. There's some fundamental principles that stay the same, but there's new moves that come out on a regular basis. And the best instructors, they question everything. They always look for a better way to do things. They have an open mind and they always want to learn new techniques. And if you don't do that, then eventually your style will become obsolete. And what that means is it won't be any good anymore. It won't be effective anymore because it hasn't evolved. It hasn't changed. So be humble, keep an open mind, definitely question things, but like you said, also be respectful. And remember that no one knows everything 100%, not even your sensei. The next question is from a warrior kid. I believe his name is Bert. And he asks, how does Jocko deal with mosquito bites and the itch? No one likes mosquito bites. And I'll tell you, in the SEAL teams, we went to some places with a crazy amount of mosquitoes. Luckily, they didn't like me too much. But I still did get bitten sometimes. And when I did get bitten, I had an ancient technique that I learned when I lived up in Maine, where the mosquitoes are as big as birds. And what you do when you have a mosquito bite is you don't itch it. That's what you do. It's actually a good exercise in your personal discipline, because as bad as you want to itch it, don't itch it. And you'll find that pretty quickly, if you can ignore it, the itching sensation will go away. And you get a little bit mentally tougher by not itching. So use it. And the other good reason not to itch, because if you itch a mosquito bite and you pick it open, it can get infected and it can be a real problem. So when you get the mosquito bites, use it as a test of your personal discipline and don't itch it. it'll go away. The next question is from Alana. And Alana is a warrior kid that actually trains at my gym. And she asked this question, did John Bozak use a Sharpie to draw the drawings in the Warrior Kid books? Well, first let me tell you a little bit about John Bozak. He was one of my best friends when I was growing up, and he was always an amazing artist. So when I wrote Warrior Kid, I wanted him to draw the pictures. And when I asked him to draw the pictures that he drew looked just like the pictures I had in my head. So that's why I think it worked very well. We knew each other. We've known each other for a long time, and he could see what I wanted to see. Now, as far as how he technically did the drawings, first he sketched them out with pencil and kind of got the drawings the way he wanted, and then he would go over it with magic markers that are kind of like Sharpies. And then this is where it gets a little bit beyond what we would do as kids. Then those pictures would get scanned into a computer. And once they're scanned into a computer, they use the computer to clean up the pictures and make them look nice and neat and ready to be in the book. And then they get added in with the words, and that's the book. Now, one thing that's important to remember about John that he told me is that when he started drawing, which he was pretty young, 7 or 8 years old, I think, when he started drawing, he wasn't that good at it. But he just practiced and practiced and practiced, and he became an incredible artist. So, if you like drawing, just like anything else, you gotta practice. Now, I got a bunch of questions from someone named Ariel, 9 years old. And the letter came, it was an actual letter that was sent to me. And if you wanna send a letter, you can send it to my gym. You can send it to Jocko Willink, Victory MMA, 3666 Midway Drive, San Diego, California, 92110. That's the gym where I train my jiu-jitsu. So, Ariel sent a letter and asked quite a few questions. Here's the first one. Why are the illustrations in black and white in the book? Well, first of all, I really like simple black and white pictures. I think colors can be a little bit distracting. So John and I decided, he's the artist that you just heard about, he decided we should stick with black and white. Next, why doesn't the book show much of Mark's parents? Good question. And I'll tell you that Mark's parents, like many parents, including my parents when I was growing up, are very, very busy. And they're just not around that much. And it's not that the parents that aren't around don't care about their kids, but actually when you care about your kids, you have to work very hard so you can provide them with food and a place to sleep, and you have a car that you can drive them in. You have to get money for those things. And so parents have to work, and they have to work very hard. So sometimes parents aren't around that much, and that's kind of the situation that Mark is in. Now, of course, some kids are lucky and their parents have more time to spend with them, and that's great too, but a lot of kids don't have that. And so that's how I set the book up, was a little bit more like the way I grew up, which was my parents both worked really hard and they weren't around all the time. And so the book focuses on Mark's Uncle Jake. And if you remember, and I've covered this on the podcast before, at the end of the book, Uncle Jake explains to Mark that Mark doesn't even need Uncle Jake, because Mark wants to know who's going to help him study when Uncle Jake's leaving. Mark wants to know who's going to help him study and who's going to get him up in the morning and who's going to help him work out. And Uncle Jake, if you remember in the first book, explains to him, you don't need me. You know what to do. You just keep doing what you need to do. Keep your discipline. And this is a good question, also from Ariel. Why isn't Uncle Jake stricter with Mark? The reason that Uncle Jake is not stricter with Mark is Uncle Jake is a good leader, and he knows that getting Mark to do stuff because Mark wants to do it is much more powerful than Mark doing things only because Uncle Jake is strict. He doesn't want to just order Mark to do things. Uncle Jake wants Mark to want to do them. And that's what a good leader does. And he actually even tells Mark this at the beginning of the first Way of the Warrior Kid book, when he's trying to offer Mark to become a warrior kid, but he's not shouting at him saying, you need to become a warrior kid, you need to do what I tell you. Instead, he kind of offers something up to him and makes sure that he wants to do it. So Uncle Jake is saying, you could become a warrior kid if you want to, and then we'll go back to the book. Mark says, but how can I be a warrior? It just didn't seem like a kid would be able to do all the things that Uncle Jake was talking about. And then Uncle Jake said, by doing everything I just said. A normal kid doesn't push himself. A warrior kid does. A normal kid doesn't work to constantly improve himself. A warrior kid does. I look at all these problems you cried to me about yesterday. A warrior kid wouldn't cry about those problems. A warrior kid would do something about those problems. Do what? I asked Uncle Jake. He looked at me and said, do what? Do whatever it takes. Every problem you have can be overcome, every one of them. You can't do pull-ups? You work out and get stronger until you can. You don't know your times tables? You study and train your mind until you know them cold. You can't swim? You learn how. You get picked on? You learn how to fight. Fight? I asked Uncle Jake. Yes, fight, Uncle Jake said. Just like anything else in the world, there are techniques to fighting, like learning a sport. And when you know the techniques and practice them, you can defend yourself from anyone. You really think I could do all that? I asked Uncle Jake. I know you can. Like I told you last night, I had to transform myself when I got into the Navy. I had to get stronger. I had to learn how to fight. I even had to learn how to learn. But I did it. And if I did it, so can you. Do you want to? Do you want to overcome all these challenges you face? Uncle Jake asked me. Of course, I shouted, feeling pretty fired up about everything Uncle Jake was telling me. Who wouldn't? Then Uncle Jake got really serious. Anything resembling a smile left his face. He looked me straight in the eyes and said, but let me tell you something. This will not be easy. This will be harder than anything you've ever done before. I will help you, but you are the one that has to do the work. You have to want the change. That has to come from you. Do you want to do this? Uncle Jake asked. I was a little nervous after what he had just said, but the thought of overcoming so many problems was like an explosion in my head. Yes, I do, I told him. I need a commitment because I don't want to waste my time on you. Do you promise? Uncle Jake asked as he held out his hand for a shake. I felt the most pressure I have ever felt in my life. I looked him in the eyes and said, yes, I promise. We shook hands. We start tomorrow morning, Uncle Jake said quietly. We walked through the park and back to the house without saying another word. Something had already changed. So, as you can see, Uncle Jake makes it very clear that it is Mark that has to want to change. And that is why he's not strict with Mark, because he's a good leader. He's not going to force him. He's going to get Mark to want to change. And the last question, and that was the last question. And now I want to do something a little bit different. I want to tell you a quick story about when Uncle Jake was a kid and when Uncle Jake learned some things that were very important to him and that really helped him begin to lead a better life. So there's a lesson to this story. It's like a fable. And so pay attention and see if you can learn what the lesson is. So here's a story from Uncle Jake. When I was a little kid, I was running in a race. It was a pretty long race for kids. My dad had taken me to another town to run the race because I liked running. The race was about 4 miles long. Adults and kids were both running at the same time, so it was kind of crowded, and it was hard to even see with all the people around. It was the biggest race I had ever been in. As soon as it started, I ran really hard as I could, and it seemed like I was winning the race. At least it seemed like I was winning for all the kids that were in the race. But I didn't look back. I kept looking ahead and focused on winning. I didn't look back at all because I knew that looking back slows you down. I just ran and ran and ran, and I was really, really tired, but I kept running as hard as I could. Even when I felt tired, I kept pushing. And finally, I got towards the end of the race, and I started to recognize where the finish line was going to be, and I turned the last corner and saw the finish line, and I headed for it. And once I had turned the corner and I started getting closer to the finish line, the crowd started to cheer. They started to cheer loud. They must be cheering for me, I thought. I must be winning. I am going to win this race. I will be the champion, I thought to myself as I picked up my pace. The closer I got to the finish line, the louder everyone got. They were screaming and cheering, and I was running so hard, I was looking straight ahead, just bounding towards the finish line. And they were screaming, and it was like I was famous. And finally, I sprinted across that finish line, and I was so proud of what I had done. And I slowed down, and then I came to a stop, and then I looked up to see all of my adoring fans. But they weren't looking at me. They were looking at someone else. And they kept cheering, and now they were cheering even louder. And I could suddenly tell that they hadn't been cheering for me at all, and I looked behind me to see what they were cheering at. And then I saw what they were cheering at. I saw a father who was pushing his daughter in a wheelchair. And she must have had a very bad disease because she couldn't really even hold her head up. But as her dad pushed her and the crowd cheered loud, she did her best to wave to the crowd, and she smiled and waved, and her dad pushed her across the finish line. He looked very tired, and she looked very happy. And I felt embarrassed. I felt embarrassed because I'd been so proud of myself, thinking I had done such a great thing, not knowing that there was someone right behind me that was doing something even better. Something even harder, something that took more courage than what I had done. And I went over to the girl and her father, and I smiled and I said, "Nice job on the race." And her mouth moved, and it looked like she was trying to say thank you because I don't think she could talk. But the dad said, "Thank you, young man. You ran a good race too." "Thanks, sir," I said. Then he pushed her away to get some water. And I realized two very important lessons. The first one is that even when I'm doing something very challenging, there's always someone that is doing something even more challenging. And more important than that, I realize that the world doesn't revolve around me. I thought everyone was cheering for me, and that made me feel good. I thought I was the center of the world. But that is seldom the case. There's a big world out there, and I'm only part of it. And I needed to stay humble and think about other people and not only of myself. And that is all we have for the Warrior Kid podcast this time. And if you want to get one of the Warrior Kid books, you can get them at warriorkid.com. And if you want a Warrior Kid t-shirt or Jiu-Jitsu rash guard, you can get them from jockostore.com. And if you're training jiu-jitsu and you need a jiu-jitsu gi for kids, you can get one at originmaine.com. And that's it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for reading the books. Thanks for thinking of others and not just of yourself. Now go out there, train hard, study hard, work hard, get after it, and be a warrior kid.